Shayna.
Christopher.
Guess what?
What?
We have a guest coming on our show today, a special guest.
Seriously.
Seriously. Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shayna Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
We are recasting the narrative of our shared common life together, using the lenses of philosophy and theology.
And sometimes psychology.
In fact, sometimes
psychology.
In fact, sometimes psychology. Psychology.
We are trying to move beyond the dominance of the binary conversation, which hogs up all the space in our public square. Those would be the binaries of politics and economics, which, while vital and necessary conversations to have, do not lead us, point us, help us, lift us, direct us to a place of human flourishing.
If you would like to learn more about What in God's Name, go to our homepage on our website, whatingods.com. You will find a trailer there where Shayna and I go into more depth about What in God's Name. We do ask you to subscribe to What in God's Name on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review. It is an algorithm world that we live in, and we're trying to, as I say hello to those algorithms. Let those algorithms know that we are here. We give a shout out to our loyal listeners beyond the boundaries of New England, and especially our listeners on the Indian subcontinent. I keep being intrigued by who you are. And so we invite emails, we invite letters to our the mailbag. Send us a letter for our mailbag and say hello. We love to hear from you. Today and next week, we are talking with Leslie Rawlings, and we'll have more of an introduction of her in a moment. But Shayna, it's part of our series, our little mini-series here on mental health and the pandemic, and more broadly, mental health in our society, Shayna. So not just... You know, often when we think of mental health, we think of individuals. Our lens is wider. We want to try to have a bifocal vision of mental health as a public question, as a public conversation, the individual and society, holding those two together. So what deeper stories can we tell about our shared common life together, given all the signs of mental and spiritual and moral distress and disease in our culture? So to help us with that, we have this conversation that we're going to have with Leslie Rawlings. And I have a suggestion. Well, let me stop there and see if you want to add anything, since I've been talking now for
two and
a half minutes.
So far, so good. I'm with you, Chris.
Okay, good. So here's my suggestion, Shayna, and it's a suggestion for you and for our audience listening. You know how we do the spinny wheel sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, most times. I'm suggesting that we do not the spinny wheel today, but something similar when we listen to Leslie, which is when we listen to Leslie coming up, to pick, you pick, I pick, our audience, you listening out there, you pick a word or a phrase that is intriguing to you, that holds interest. And if you, listener out there, tell us what that is, we would love to hear from you in the mailbag. And Shayna, for you and me, we listen, pick out a word, and then we'll come back and riff. You riff on your word, or I'll riff on your word, you riff on mine. We'll just kind of do it that way as a way to wrap up the show. That's my suggestion. What do you think?
I think it's great. It's a sort of modified, shortened version rendition of Lectio Divina.
It is. So yeah, right.
Let's give it a try.
And Shayna, one other thing before we listen to Leslie, I was thinking our show having to do with mental health, who knows who's going to be listening to it? So I think it's due diligence on our part to give out the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline phone number. If you need it or a friend needs it, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline phone number is 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. That's a 24-hour availability on that phone number. Today, we welcome to the show Leslie Rawlings, licensed clinical social worker. She will tell you a little bit more about herself in a moment, but the reason we want to bring her on the show is because one very underreported story about our shared common life together is the mental health of our country. And so we've done this before, Shana. Shana, you and I have had conversations. We've had shows that focus on our country, our society's mental health. But today we're going to have a conversation with Leslie, and she'll help us tell a deeper story about our country's mental health and where we are.
And I'm really looking forward to getting into it, Chris, because with all the trauma there is in our country, I just don't think we can talk about this enough.
Yeah, that is so. So, Leslie, we are so happy to have you with us.
So happy to be here. Thanks, you all.
Yes, indeed. So, please start off, if you would, to help our listeners get a sense of who you are and what you do.
As you stated, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I started in the field in the early 90s, 1991, worked in the Bronx at Montefiore Medical Center in their first AIDS unit, moved into inpatient psychiatry, incredible experience, beautiful hospital, beautiful support, and slowly started to move out of that inpatient world into private practice and seeing people individually. I found very early on that I did not have the skills to work with people individually, and so I had a hunger just to really learn different modalities to help people in their obstacles in life, and that has been, until today, my pursuit. So I work with people who really come in presenting with anything from somatic presentations to interpersonal conflict to workplace challenges to their own dysregulation, and use several different trauma modalities to help people navigate. So I'm really there to guide them and empower them and give them the skills for themselves, as opposed to them depending upon me.
Nice. I want to ask you about that, and I know Shana's going to have great questions about that in a minute. But just a little more about yourself. What motivated you to go in this direction? I mean, this is your life's work. What motivated you to go in that direction?
You know, after college, I joined the Peace Corps. I lived overseas in Africa for a couple years, China for a few years, and I came back wanting nothing but money and the corporate world. So 7 months later, I realized that's really not what I wanted, and I was with a recruiter, and we were actually in Nashville walking by the Vanderbilt Divinity School, and I really had an epiphany and was very led to go to Divinity School, although I did not want to be a minister, a pastor. So I had a master's in theology and pastoral counseling from there, and I did a dual majors in social work at the University of Tennessee and had this joint degree.
Neat. So, in preparation for this conversation, you mentioned to me the concept of a functional adult. And so I would love for you to tell us about what makes for a functional adult, seeing as we don't often see very many of them, and I'm not even sure I'm one myself. So tell us about functional adults.
You know, obviously we're on Earth. Things happen that are not so pleasant or comfortable. That doesn't mean we have to be traumatized. And when I talk about trauma, I'm really talking about a continuum from the psychiatric diagnosis of PTSD to being wounded. And really what, when I talk about trauma, it's, or when we as in the field talk about it, is really when something about an experience, a person, a child, has not been able to stay present to, has not been able to understand, has not been able to give meaning to, and hasn't been able to have themselves, their thoughts, their feelings around something. They haven't been able to integrate the experience. And so that trapped event energy is in the nervous system, is in the brain. And so part of the trauma work that we do is really untrapping that and rewiring the brain in addition. And that can be done through EMDR, through somatic experiencing techniques, through reparenting. But we have to kind of get a sense of not so much who am I, because that's an ongoing journey, but what is a functional self? So we're trying to define at the same time what is a functional adult versus any kind of, you know, I draw a lot from Pia Mellody's trauma model and how she defines, she's retired now, but she was clinical director at the Meadows. She's got 3 books out, and she really was a pioneer in looking at the effects of childhood trauma and emotional development and where we get stuck and arrested. And how she defines the adult is that we, just by coming to this planet and breathing, we have inherent worth and mattering. And that's, we all matter the same. There is no less than, there is no better than. Our strengths don't make us better than, our weaknesses don't make us less than. And if we grow up getting dysfunctional attachment, we're pretty much set up to have that less than, better than thing going. And when I say less than, that is toxic shame. Anything that's damaged goods, not mattering, not good enough, I'm so stupid. Anything that brings us to a place that is out of that inherent worth, and I'm human and fallible, and it's okay if I mess up and I'm imperfect, I still have this essence of God, universe, you know, just by being alive. And so that's the, she's got 5 core issues. That is the first core issue. The second is that the child is vulnerable and that they need protection, that the parent isn't too close, the parent is too far. And again, we have to look at age appropriateness. There's a 0 to 4 stage, there's a 5 to 10 stage, there's an adolescent stage. And so when we're doing trauma work, we're looking at the parents too close, too far, or were they appropriate in that stage of development. We're looking at who was mom, who was dad, who was another caretaker, what was their marriage. We're looking at the effects of anything that's, quote, less than nurturing upon the child. So the first core issue is I'm enough and I matter just by being. The second core issue is all about safety and vulnerability. And in each category, there are trauma reactions, or we go young. So in the first core issue of mattering, we can either go less than or better than or both. In the second core issue of vulnerability, I can either be too open, too vulnerable in who I am towards you or receiving you, or I can be on the opposite extreme, walled. And somewhere in between is that adult who's got functional boundaries in both containing myself and protecting myself. And so in the sort of, we're looking at kind of in the day-to-day life, where am I not in that adult? How old am I? And how do I learn how to be an adult and help within myself those younger parts that have been injured in some way?
That's, can you tell us what the other 2 cores are in that, Leslie?
The third core issue is reality, which is really a person's thoughts, feelings, and behavior. And am I in my true self with my thoughts, my feelings, my behaviors, or am I back in my trauma reality? And Pia Mellody talks about like that we are human and we come in born connected. And if that's not mirrored and fostered and nurtured and guided, I'm either going to be totally shut down and not have a clue what I'm feeling, or I'm going to be out of control. And so there are eight basic emotions that are healthy. You know, our own fear is healthy versus panic or anxiety or hypervigilance or startling. And my own anger, not raging and not shutting down, being depressed, but my own anger is about being firm, empowered, strong, assertive. My own guilt's going to tell me about my morals and values, as opposed to being guiltless or full of guilt for asking for what I need if it's appropriate. My own shame keeps me humble and know that I'm not God and I need God, whereas toxic shame is in that less than category, or shameless is I can do whatever I want and I don't really care about the effect on you. Passion, joy, other emotions, pain, very healthy to have pain to move through what we need to move through. The fourth core issue is about needs and wants, that every child has needs and wants. And if that's heard and seen in a child, and, you know, instead of making the kid's bed for them, you guide them in how to do it. But if we grow up not knowing what we need or want, or if we grow up being anti-dependent, you know, like I can put the air conditioner in the car by myself and pull out my back, you know, or if I'm really needy, those would be considered trauma reactions. And then the fifth core issue is about our internal essence and our spontaneity in our life. And if we grow up in a home that's where we've been shut down, you know, we may not have that our life within ourselves might be shut down, or we might be out of control, either extreme. So trauma, as she puts it, are in extremes. And so this paradigm is just extremely helpful to kind of understand what is healthy, what is functional, and where am I as far as being out of that moderate place in my adult.
And who is the therapist who wrote this book?
Her name is Pia Melody. She's written Facing Codependence, Facing Love Addiction, and The Intimacy Factor. She is currently retired from the Meadows a rehab out in Arizona. Codependence is a really funny word. It originated early on as sort of the co-alcoholic, but as addictions just multiplied into drugs or gambling, it has a lot of different meanings. In this model in particular, it's really about immaturity, emotional immaturity, age regression, and leaving our functional self.
So that kind of leads to my question, which is, if I, as a child, have traumatic experiences, bad parenting, you know, failed attachments, and I don't heal, I'm not a healed person, I've somehow coped, I've gone on in life, but I carry these unintegrated pieces of my experience with me into my adulthood, defined chronologically rather than psychologically. How does that play out in families?
You know, honestly, this is what our lifetime is about, is to become integrated and whole. And I don't know if there's a finish line for me personally, But I think we're all fragmented to some degree, and I think part of the work is getting to know, to feel in your body, and to understand when your body is going back in time, and to practice in therapy of how to help that part, and to get into your functional adult, and to help heal so that in real time we can have a sense of it happening and keeping ourselves grounded back into our adult. Now that may take 100 times, you know what I mean? I mean, it's really ongoing. But what would it look like? I mean, if I'm 3 years old, I'm going to be all needy and wanting my husband to do everything for me and dependent and fill me up because I'm empty. And, you know, if I'm a teenager, I'm going to be walled, avoidant, cold, destructive, angry, reactionary. You know, it just depends kind of what age we go to. But the good news is it's workable. It doesn't mean it stops happening, these trauma reactions. But they're, you know, in the field, we talk about frequency, intensity, duration. It doesn't happen as often. It's not as intense. It doesn't last as long over time.
Yeah, so you're presenting an example of the continual, unending work of becoming a whole and healthy human being. And I'm thinking of unacknowledged shame that many people walk around with. My understanding of unacknowledged shame is that it's deeply, or can be deeply, connected to rage. Again, you're more grounded in the nuances of this, but so that's my rudimentary understanding of unacknowledged shame. And so my question is more about that. How can unacknowledged shame play out in relationships? And you've named some of them, I suppose.
So if a child is physically shamed, abused, verbally shamed, abused, you know, like, you know, why would you think that? Or somehow a child's thoughts or feelings aren't validated, you know, big boys don't cry, or you're such a drama queen. You know, if we're verbally or physically attacked, right, that makes a child believe that we don't matter, we're bad for having whatever, and that is shaming. Neglect is also shaming. It makes us believe that we don't exist. The hero caretaker role is usually when the child is elevated. So the two roles, or the forms of abuse that really shames a child, is the intellectual shaming, the emotional shaming, the physical shaming, even sexual shaming. And if that's living in a child's body, usually what Pia says is offending from the victim position. Very often when we hit that less than worthless, damaged place within us, that toxic shame, we can react from it in different ways. And one way is raging. One way is that kind of teenager out of control rage. Another is dissociating, numbing, checking out. Another is kind of going passive aggressive and manipulative. So there's ways that we all offend differently from, or react differently from, that shame. And one thing she talks about that I just, you know, when I learned her model, my colleague Cindy Browning, really, I was not interested in taking her training. This was about 10, 12 years ago. I was doing different modalities. I was very happy with what I was doing. And Pia was coming to New Jersey, and my colleague was kind of forcing my arm a bit. And I just thought, okay, I'm, you know, it's people pleasing. I'll just get her to shut up and I'll just go, just to please her. And really, it was like I had waited my whole life to learn this model, because I was experiencing things that I had never had words for. So she talks about something called shame attacks. And it's really when, it's kind of, if you're looking at the nervous system, it's when the body is going into so much fear and freeze and shame that it's almost like a paralyzed state of shame and fear. And just to have language for it, and to have the concepts, are just so helpful in order to do the experiential work.
Listening to you speak and thinking about, you know, where you started talking about, you know, we matter by virtue of the fact that we're here. We matter. And how much of that is not validated for so many people in so many ways. And certainly culturally, that is not any of the stuff that we are encouraged to look at, honor, validate, give weight to. Like, it gets so downplayed. It gets so downplayed, and it has been so downplayed for so long. I feel like we are now swimming in this toxic soup of emotional instability, and you see it at every level, you know, in society. I mean, my God, I'd love for somebody to do an analysis of folks down in Washington, D.C. Like, oh my God, who said you guys were adult enough to lead this country, you know, into all of your reactionary stuff?
What I love about, you know, she talks about this in Inherent Worth, that if we're not getting that functional parenting and knowing that we matter just by existing, right? And remember, our parents have come from their own generations of trauma and didn't have the means to see what they needed to see. But if we're in that deep shame, we look outside of ourselves to matter, either with what other people think or what we're supposed to be doing or what we own or how well, you know, my daughter plays in the soccer game or what trophy they did or didn't get. You know, it's all outside that it, the mattering, and this is the delusion or the lie or how we were made to cope. If I just do what my father wants, then I'll matter. And we're already in loss of self. We're not in ourselves. We're adapting to the other. And if I just wear this or look like this or do that, you know, it's all outer based. Or we compare. You know, we walk around and compare with everybody. So I'm either sliding high or low. And that the inherent worth is really the anchor to the model. It's really that in you're going to fake it till you make it until, and sometimes integration takes 6, 7, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, but meaning I'm enough and I matter, and that manifests as warmth and swelling in my heart, and I want to live and make my decisions from that inherent worth. I want to love myself and others from that mattering, because if I love from my trauma, it's not going to go so well.
No, it is not.
So we, you know, this is part of the human condition too, is looking outside of ourselves to matter.
That's part one, Shayna.
Wow. I forgot how good that interview was.
Do you have a word or phrase that you want to riff on?
I do. Do you?
I do. Do you?
I do. Would you like to go first, Christopher, or shall I?
I do. Functional adult. Just functional adult. And she does such a good job of getting into the details of what that means and what that looks like from Pia Mellody's model. When I think of the story of our shared common life, and I said it in the interview, my question to her, like, where are the functional adults? And so for us to get health, there is the individual component. Like I want to be a healthy individual so that I can have a sense of meaning in my life. I want to be a healthy individual so I can be a good dad and a good husband. And there's the additional dimension of just the craziness of our society. And I'll just stop with this because I was thinking of Peter Stanky, who does the systems theory, and he writes a lot about churches and congregations, but it's applicable to wider any system, including the big system of our society. The basic concept that I'm attracted to is he says it's not that everybody needs to be healthy, because that's not going to happen, but there needs to be enough health. There needs to be, to use the language of functional adult, there needs to be enough functional adults that can act as a buffer or it's almost like white blood cells coming around a disease and isolating it and buffering the health of the body from the sickness. So
there needs to be enough white blood cells.
Yeah, there needs to be, exactly. There needs, so just the necessity.
There needs to be enough.
There needs to be functional adults.
Can I comment on that, or you want me
Please.
Just to go to my thing?
No, you can't. We've got time.
That conversation, I remember when we had it, getting away from, stepping back from the interview, and thinking, wow, that goes a long way to answering the question, what is wrong with us? And this sort of dovetails with your comment, okay? Because the line that stood out at me is we are all fragmented to some degree. We're all fragmented to some degree. There is nothing that she is talking about by way of what it takes to raise a healthy adult, what it takes to be a functional adult that lives in a place of high value in our culture right now. I mean, stop and think about that for just a second. But there is nothing in that list of, you know, being validated for what we feel, being validated for what we want, having our anger validated, having our fear validated. And so if we're all fragmented to some degree, then the question really is, you know, how do we be made whole? Of course, there's a number of approaches to do that. Therapy might be one. Spiritual direction might be one. But simply staying grounded in the cesspool that is our common culture together, I don't think is going to get anybody to a place. I mean, that is not a factory for producing functional adults. That having been said, I think when you look through the lens that Leslie's offering us, it allows us to do something else, which is to move potentially. It certainly invites us, creates an opportunity for us to move into a place of compassion, you know, as opposed to just, because we can't do anything for the dysfunctional adults in our lives if they just push us. They push all of our buttons. They drive us to our most dysfunctional selves. You know, and that becomes a, you know, F you, no, screw them. And that's where we are, right? God, the contempt that the right has for the left is really only paralleled by, you know, the extent to which the left has dismissed the right completely as being intellectually inferior. That's not going to get us anyplace. So I really appreciated being led back into that place of remembering that people weren't born screwed up. You know, that happened. That happened afterwards.
If you listening have a particular phrase or word that you liked and want to participate, send us a letter. We will put it in the mailbag and lift it out and share. We'd love to hear from you about this. We are going to hear part two of our conversation with Leslie next week. So there's more to come.
There's more. But wait, there's more.
But in the meantime, Shana, be curious.
Go deep.
And shine light. Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. We ask you to join our generous donors on Patreon and support these good, meaningful, helpful, healing conversations.
And they can do that, Chris, by going to patreon.com.
Indeed. And
indeed.
In the search bar, What in God's Name. Sign up for our newsletter at our website, whatingods.com, which is Shana.
W-H-A-T-I-N-G-O-D-S.
And we're also helped. And we're also happy to have as our corporate sponsor today, Solution Aversion Associates. When life's problems can only be fixed by changing your lifestyle and you simply do not want to, we can help. We are Solution Aversion Associates. We offer enough alternative facts to help you go on living just as you always have, because we know denial is underrated. So, don't let reality get in your way. Call Solution Aversion Associates today
at 1-800-WHO-CARES.
Great to see you, Shana.
Always good to see you, Chris.